Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon, I'm Adam Zavadsky. Here are the headlines at 4 o'clock. Prime Minister Boris Johnson addresses Parliament outlining the latest Brexit proposal.
To remain a prisoner of existing positions is to become a cause of deadlock rather than breakthrough.
Scottish Parliament debate blanket ban on smacking children.
This move legally puts Scotland in line with 57 other countries where adults and children have the same rights with regards to assault.
National Poetry Day celebrates 25 years.
It can help remind people that poetry is accessible and great fun, and the importance of learning poetry and how it helps the mental processing in the brain.
Also, 4 staff of the police headquarters in Paris have been killed. The attacker has not yet been named. After releasing his long-awaited Brexit withdrawal proposal to the EU yesterday afternoon, Prime Minister Boris Johnson addressed the House of Commons today with MPs debating the contents of the document. Our reporter Shoni Maguire has the latest.
In the space of a day, Prime Minister Boris Johnson's rhetoric has gone from this:
"We are coming out of the EU on October the 31st, come what may." Conference.
To this:
"They do not deliver everything we would have wished. They do represent a compromise. But to remain a prisoner of existing positions is to become a cause of deadlock rather than breakthrough."
From the cheers of the Conservative loyal to the dismay of the government's opposition, the Prime Minister addressed Parliament today, outlining the details of his government's withdrawal proposal, submitted to the EU yesterday afternoon. In another heated Commons session, Johnson continued to stress the importance of respecting the referendum, and that there can be no path to a deal without replacing the so-called backstop.
"And so, as I've emphasised time and again, there can be no path to a deal except by reopening the withdrawal agreement and replacing the so-called backstop."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
"While as I stand here today, we are some way from a resolution, it is to the credit of our European friends that they have accepted the need to address these issues. And I welcome the constructive calls I've had over the last 24 hours, including with President Juncker, Chancellor Merkel and Taoiseach Varadkar."
Well, the Irish minister spoke to the press today during his trip to Sweden, saying that Brexit proposals are welcome, but fall short on a number of aspects. Leo Varadkar insists they'll need to explore in much more detail about the customs proposals for both sides of the Irish border. He also expressed concerns about the way Northern Ireland's politicians would be able to decide on the agreements post-Brexit.
"The proposals that have been put forward by the UK are certainly welcome in the sense that we now have written proposals that we can engage on. But they do fall short in a number of aspects. Certainly, our view is that any consent mechanism that were to exist would have to be reflective of the views of the whole of the population of Northern Ireland and not give any one party of any denomination a veto."
Leader of the opposition, Jeremy Corbyn, was also highly critical of the proposals, describing them as unrealistic and damaging.
"The proposals are unrealistic and damaging and will, as I think the Prime Minister full well knows, be rejected in Brussels, rejected in this House and rejected across this country."
The reaction from Brussels today to the proposal was far from complimentary from the government. EM4 News spoke to the leader of the Liberal Democrats in the European Parliament, Catherine Berder, MEP, who said it was insulting that the Prime Minister had submitted something that he knows does not comply with the EU regulations.
"I find it insulting that he is coming back with something that he knows cannot comply with EU legislation that needs to protect its single market and its customs union. And he knows, I'm sure he must know that it won't comply." So,
she also went on to say that the EU would still like the UK to stay in the European Union.
"They would much rather the Brits stay, even now, even after what we've caused them, all these problems. They would still rather us stay. But if we have to go, they will protect the single market above all else."
First Minister's questions took place today with the issue of Brexit at the top of the debate agenda. Our reporter Owen Garner was in the chamber and has given us a rundown of the latest events.
At another highly charged First Minister's Questions, Brexit was the first topic of discussion. Today's session saw an especially rowdy chamber reacting to the First Minister Nicola Sturgeon clashing with interim Tory leader Jackson Carlow over the highly contentious issue. In a heated back and forth between the First Minister and the Tory leader, Carlow raised concerns about the possibility of a new deal that some Remainers would agree with being rejected. The First Minister remained firm in her beliefs, however, saying that if her alternative to no deal was no Brexit. This statement comes after Prime Minister Boris Johnson saying that if the latest draft of his deal is rejected, then he will cease negotiations with Brussels. The opening of today's FMQs was dominated by Brexit discussions, with both sides sticking very firmly to the party line. There was a lot of discussion and a fair bit of mudslinging, but nothing that much new was said.
Owen Garner there giving us the latest on Brexit from Holyrood. He also caught up with the MSP Stuart Stevenson to get a further reaction. Here's what he had to say about the possible impact of Brexit on Scotland.
For my constituents and for businesses right across Scotland, if we're to leave, that's a very important point, because food and drink is one of our biggest industries and it will be dramatically impacted if we're not in the customs union and the single market. So the impact of leaving the EU but leaving the single market and the customs union is really very severe and very expensive for Scotland.
A ban on smacking children is set to be debated and voted upon today in the Scottish Parliament, which has sparked a discourse among the Scottish public. Owen McFadden has more.
The so-called smacking ban, which is currently being debated in Holyrood, has become a controversial topic, with many people feeling the ban is over-excessive. If passed, it would make any physical aggression used to discipline a child illegal. The proposal has been brought forward by Scottish Greens MSP John Finney, and has garnered cross-party support and been praised by children's charities such as Together Scotland. However, the proposal has faced opposition from campaign group Be Reasonable, who protested outside the Scottish Parliament this morning.
So we're here because we oppose the plan to criminalise smacking. We think many thousands of parents agree with us. 70% of the Scottish public don't want to see parental smacking criminalised. We think this law will have lots of negative outcomes in family life. It'll see intervention by the police and by social workers and others, which will be quite distressing for parents and for children.
Dr. Karen Goodall, head of child psychology at the University of Edinburgh, has spoken in favour of the smacking ban, claiming that it will only serve to protect children from future abuse.
I'm in full support of the Scottish Government's move towards removing the justifiable assault clause. This move legally puts Scotland in line with 57 other countries where adults and children have the same rights with regards to assault. Children are the most vulnerable members of our society because their brains and physiological systems are still developing. And hundreds of studies from over the last 50 years have shown that physical punishment has the potential to cause adverse effects in children. Most notable is its association with increased aggression, but some studies have also associated it with mental health issues, such as increased anxiety and depressive symptoms.
In contrast to this view, Dr. Stuart Waiton, Professor of Sociology and Criminology at Abertay University, has lambasted the potential ban as authoritarian. I spoke with him earlier.
The ban has actually received quite a lot of backing from children's charities, with just a lot of the charities saying that all the ban really does is give children the same protection from assault as adults. But you seem to quite sternly disagree with this stance, and that it's not something that is necessary to give children that same level of protection.
Well, I hope if they're going to follow their logic. So, for example, if you were to go home tonight and your child was misbehaving and you took away their mobile phone and said you're grounded for a week and sent them to bed, well, if you did that to an adult, you'd be seen as either a very strange person and possibly arrested. So if we're going to follow the logic of treating children and adults exactly the same, we're going to be in all sorts of trouble, because children and adults are very different. We discipline children and we punish children. We don't do that to adults, but we do it to children. So all I can say to the children's charity is they need to be a little bit more mature and at least understand that children and adults are very different, and a light smack from a parent should not be seen as a criminal act.
It may not constitute or necessarily have to constitute a criminal act. I understand your point of view on that, but there are those, such as Together Scotland, who would argue that smacking doesn't actually improve poor behaviour in children and can adversely affect them. Do you not think there is a stance there that it could be supported?
Yeah, I think if you are beating your child severely, regularly, without any other form of discipline, I think that would have a negative effect on the child. If you are using an occasional smack as part of a much wider framework of how you discipline your child, I think most people would agree with me that that has absolutely no long-term or even short-term negative consequences for a child. I think the research that these charities do is what is called advocacy research, which tries to prove what they already know. And serious research on this issue doesn't support any of these ideas. And I think you can just use your common sense to know that if someone is a decent parent who occasionally smacks their child on the bottom, especially young children, that has no major impact on a child whatsoever.
The issue has caused a great amount of conflict amongst parents, with many feeling that light smacking is simply a form of discipline that is important in a child's development, and others arguing that children should be raised in a violence-free environment. Janice Taylor, 68, had this to say.
I believe there should be a line drawn with smacking children. There's no need for violence, but a small tap on the bottom doesn't do any child any good, any harm. It never did me any harm, and I didn't think it did my children any harm.
Meanwhile, Lindsay Halpin, 23, felt otherwise.
I am in favour of the smacking ban because of the fact that you could create a level of fear for the child. You wouldn't hit an adult over something minor, so why does hitting a child make it acceptable?
With the debate continuing in the Scottish Parliament and a vote set to take place thereafter, which is expected to pass, the fallout from this issue will likely continue.
And now, here are the national and international bulletins from Chris Gourlay.
The High Court in Belfast has ruled today that Northern Ireland's abortion law breaches the UK's commitments on human rights. EN4 News' Joe Anderson has more on the story.
The case of Sarah Ewart was taken in Belfast today. Ewart was denied a termination in 2013 despite doctors stating her fetus would not survive outside the womb. Currently, a termination is only permitted in Northern Ireland if a woman's life is at risk or if there is a risk of permanent and serious damage to her mental or physical health. Granny Taggart, a spokeswoman from Amnesty International, spoke on Ewart's victory.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a hugely significant day in the fight for abortion rights for Northern Ireland. Today's ruling is confirmation and vindication of our rights and, of course, of the position that the law here was in need of change and reform.
Members of the anti-abortion campaign group Precious Life gathered outside the court in opposition of Ewart's case. Their founder, Bernadette Smith, condemned the decision.
I would state very clearly that this ruling is incompatible with the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, signed by the United Kingdom, which states very clearly that every child needs special safeguards and care, including legal protection before as well as after birth. It's a very sad day in Northern Ireland when the Belfast High Court completely ignored the rights of the most vulnerable in society, the unborn children.
Campaigners challenging increases to the retirement age have lost their case against the government at the High Court in London. The ruling comes after campaigners claimed that the way the government introduced state pension age increases was both discriminatory and unfair to women born in the 1950s, as they were not given enough time to prepare for the changes. Anne Keane, a campaigner for Women Against State Pension Inequality, says they are heartbroken with the court's ruling and plan to launch an appeal.
I'm absolutely shocked, and there's lots of anger here and disbelief, and this will cause further heartache to 1950s born women who faced inequality all of our lives. I'm almost lost for words.
Hong Kong authorities are set to announce a ban on face masks at public gatherings following months of anti-government protests. The plans come during a week in which protests took a violent turn after a police officer used live rounds on an 18-year-old protester who currently remains in critical condition. The government plans to introduce the ban through emergency legislation that has not been used in the city for over 50 years. And in sport, Dina Asher-Smith has become the first British woman to win a major global sprint title after winning gold in the 200-metre sprint in Doha last night. The 23-year-old was the overwhelming favourite throughout the World Athletics Championship and sets a new British record of 21.88 seconds. Dina says she had dreamed of this moment and that it still hasn't properly sunk in yet.
To be a world champion, it means so much. It's something that when I started in track and field, I didn't think I was ever going to be able to be world champion. I just always aim to improve every year, so it means a lot.
With the Fast and Furious crew barely out of the city, another blockbuster film has already taken its place in Eurovision, starring Will Ferrell. With a seemingly never-ending stream of movies being shot in the capital, our reporter Rory Gilmore looks into what exactly Edinburgh's appeal is.
Waggle dances. Who knew how the apple was made? We decrypted rumours, white whiskers of truth from the textbooks of the day. Some things were certain. We'd no orchards, no farms, no vineyards or Everglades. Just buzzing recollections from kaput holotapes.
Shakespeare, Keats, Dickinson, Whitman. Truth, a theme which has been explored by countless poets to discuss numerous subjects such as love, nature, and identity. To open an extract from Waggle Dancers, a contemporary example by Russell Jones. In his words, a truth that the decline of bees would be disastrous for the planet.
With no orchards, no farms, no vineyards or Everglades, just buzzing recollections from kaput holotapes. So we placed our faith in technology, trusted the data. We built solar wings, hives of nano-replica apis to seek and recover.
With the aim of National Poetry Day, of promoting poets and poetry, events will be held in libraries, schools and bookshops up and down the country. Speaking to EN4 News, Mary Halls, owner of the Edinburgh Bookshop, discusses the importance of the annual celebration and poetry itself.
It can help remind people that poetry is accessible and great fun, and the importance of learning poetry and how it helps the mental processing in the brain, because there's a lot of evidence that says when we stop learning things, the brain slows up in the 60s, 70s. And it's not that the brain cells are dying, it's that we're not learning things.
The National Poetry Library in Edinburgh's Canongate will play host to the main Scottish celebrations. Ambassador of the event, Sally Crabtree, has transformed the library into her installation entitled Sweet Shop of Words. The counter of conceptual confectionery allows visitors to exchange a gold coin and choose one sweet at the counter, with each item providing a philosophical meaning. Speaking to the programme from the Scottish Poetry Library, Crabtree explains the unique way she explores poetry.
So I'm quite interested in how you can present poetry in different ways, ways that you might not normally expect to find it, really. And also today we've been working with some of the children from the school next door, which has been brilliant. They've been eating their own poetry, making edible poems, writing songs, creating poetry. So the name of the game is really to inspire people of all ages and backgrounds to know that poetry is delicious.
In an era of fake news, Crabtree believes that good poetry has the power to deliver great truth.
True poetry from time, you know, from the beginning of time, they spoke about truths that don't change, you know, the real truths. And that's what great poetry does. It touches upon those ultimate truths, you know, the essence of existence. And I think maybe the job of poetry is that, you know, you've got all this madness going on, but actually you're able to just, not transcend it, but to just think, look, all I can offer you is the beauty or the truth of what I'm saying, and to not get sucked into that.
Scottish Poetry Library's project coordinator, Sam Tung, believes that people still seek truth through poetry at times of significance in their life.
Yeah, and definitely when we're celebrating poetry as truth, it's those times. Often we get a lot of inquiries for kind of births, marriages, funerals, those kinds of real significant times in people's lives. They still reach for that truth of poetry that can speak very deeply to their experience and what they're going through as well. So I think that's what we try to promote.
We apologise, ladies and gentlemen, for that technical difficulty. That was actually our arts correspondent Heather Ferguson reporting on this year's theme of Truth of the National Poetry Day celebrations of its 25th anniversary today. Founded in 1994, the annual celebration aims to celebrate excellence in poetry and increase the art form's audience. And not to be left out, I've written my own limerick for National Poetry Day. There was a driver in reverse while trying to call and converse. An unfortunate crash and resulting whiplash spelled the end of both him and his hearse. And now we're going to go back to that story that unfortunately we didn't manage to get, with Rory Gilmore reporting on Fast and the Furious leaving the city to be replaced by Eurovision.
In the last few years, Edinburgh has become a very popular destination for Hollywood film productions. As the silver screen heads back to Edinburgh, so too does road closures and limited access to streets. The Royal Mail is a tourist hotspot, but for the next few days, a large portion of it will be closed. Street closures on this specific area have been frequent during filming productions in the last few years. Residents of the Royal Mail are becoming increasingly frustrated at the disruption. Victoria Partridge, a resident of the Royal Mail, spoke of her experience with the disruption that she has had in her area.
It causes a bit of bother when I want to get the bus, because it's the filming blocks off the roads that I need to get to my bus stop, so it means I need to take a longer route going to work in uni.
Nicole Miller, a resident of Coates Crescent, also spoke of her frustration.
It was really difficult to get in and out of my street because it was blocked off. I was asked a couple of times why I was there. One of my friends, she also had trouble like getting to and from work because one of the roads that she walks on to get to work, it was closed. And when she tried to walk down it, they like asked her what she was doing there and why she was like walking on the road. So it's been a bit annoying.
There have been benefits to Edinburgh locals and the Scottish film industry, however. Production spending in Scotland hit a record high of £95 million in 2017, and over the past decade, spending has increased by 300%. Screen Scotland has also increased its funding to £2 million for television production and £4 million for film production annually. Over 200 extras will be used in the latest film, Eurovision. Film student Innes Goddall spoke to us more about her experience working on the Fast and Furious 9 film.
It has lots of benefits, not just to film students, but to like the city in general. But in particular for people that study film or want to get into film, it was really interesting to work on. Like working on such a big project as Fast and Furious is something I'd never done before. And obviously it's so different from like a small film shoot that you'd do here. Like they've got the cameras are mounted on cars and on motorbikes, and you're holding up entire crowds of people as cars go like screaming by. So it was like a whole different world, but it was really interesting.
Although it seems overwhelmingly positive for the Scottish film scene and locals involved in the industry, there is a growing concern that Edinburgh City Council is not getting enough money for allowing the foreign production companies to film in the city. Conservative MSP Rachel Hamilton said during the filming of Fast and Furious 9 in September, the SNP and Labour administration should be fleecing these firms for all they can, instead of allowing the capital to be a walkover. Of course, this negligence means there is even more pressure on council budgets, and it's the taxpayers who have to pick up the slack. On a national level, the filming has been largely well received. There has been a fun atmosphere around the film sets, with videos of stars going viral on social media, like this one of Vin Diesel singing the national anthem.
Let me hear you sing it.
Viral videos like this get hundreds of thousands of engagements online, but how does that translate into tourists travelling to Scotland to see the film locations? We spoke to Visit Scotland's Film and Creative Industries manager Jenny Steele to find out more about Scotland's film tourism and how it is important to the Scottish tourism industry in general.
We've done a lot of research on this in the last few years, and we now know that 1 in 5 visitors are inspired to come to Scotland having seen the destination on film or television. So there's a huge audience out there that we can be tapping into in terms of film fans looking at Scotland on the big or small screen and then wanting to come and find out locations and experience the places that their favourite film stars have been and recreate different sort of scenes from their favourite movies.
She also mentioned that there is money to be made by small touring businesses that can link themselves to the filming locations.
I think it's a really good opportunity for tourism businesses who are maybe not directly connected with filming to even think about how they could work with tour operators who are bringing people to that area, and what could they offer them so that they could be part of that business opportunity.
Karen Comerco of Best Scottish Tours spoke of the role the film industries play in her business.
I would say that there are clients that do visit us because of film and television. I think now it is a massive, massive thing. I think it's one of these industries that people really focus on and people identify with. So when they're travelling somewhere, if they can see something that they've seen on the big screen, I think it does definitely enhance a tour. You know, it makes something they've seen on the big screen come to life. The context might be completely different, but they're identifying buildings or landscapes or whatever, so it has played a part in increasing tourism or having an effect on the numbers that come to certain places.
Filming locations are undeniably important to Scottish tourism as a whole, and the filming industry is benefiting too by having a chance to work in the productions that are filmed here in Edinburgh. Although there is contempt from Edinburgh residents and some politicians towards the upturn in large foreign production companies filming in Edinburgh, there appears to be some real benefits to it nationally.
That was Rory Gilmore reporting for EN4 News. And now, with the latest sports news, here is Erin McRitchie.
Edinburgh Rugby head coach Richard Cockerell has given an update on hooker Dave Cherry, who suffered an arm injury during Edinburgh's 50-15 win over Zebre at the weekend.
He's got an injury to his AC joint, so he won't be fit for the weekend. And hopefully we'll get it scanned in the next couple of days once the swelling's gone down and see where it is, but it's probably a 4 to 6 week injury, I'd have thought.
Meanwhile, Edinburgh's latest debutant, Mike Villamsey, spoke to the media for the first time, revealing why he chose to sign for the capital club.
You know, I was always eager to get over this side and just sort of grow my game as a whole. And, you know, when Cockers gave me the call, and I thought it would help me quite a bit in, growing as a hooker. And, you could clearly see the upward curve that the team has been on over the last 2 years. And I was quite eager to get into that sort of setup, and I've already learned so much, and hopefully I can contribute going forward.
In the football world, Stephen Naismith is targeting a return to play for Hearts by the end of October, and at Hibs, Academy graduate Jaden Fairley has signed his first professional contract with the club. Both teams will be in action this weekend as Hearts take on Kilmarnock at home, whilst Hibs travel to face Aberdeen. Next up, speaking exclusively to EN4 News, sports journalist David Barnes, who is currently in Japan covering the Rugby World Cup for the Offside Line, discussed what the mood has been like around the Scotland camp following their one win and one defeat in the pool stages.
Yeah, well, I think the Samoa result was made a big difference. The week before that, as part of the regulations, they have to have so many press events, and we were going up every day to their hotel, and it was a fairly bleak place, fairly depressing. There wasn't much to say after the Ireland result, but there's been definitely an up turn in the mood since then. And I think they're fairly confident. I think they realised that Samoa result didn't fix all the problems that were exposed in the Ireland game, but they're moving in the right direction. So it's onwards to Russia, and then the big ones, obviously Japan, 4 days after that. So I think the real concern now is trying to make sure that everybody's fit for the Japan game by getting through the Russia game with the minimum possible fuss.
And that's all the sporting news for now. Back to you, Adam.
Thank you. And now, here are the local bulletins from Chris Gourley.
A drug trafficker in Edinburgh has been jailed after being caught with over £180,000 worth of heroin in his flat. Craig Dimelow was found in possession of nearly 2 kilos of the Class A drug, quantities of adult heroin and equipment used for cutting the drug. A stun gun was also found, which belonged to 54-year-old Ian Newlands, who was a council's taxpayer for the property. The Scottish Government will confirm a policy of no support for fracking on Thursday, according to an information accidentally published online. Energy Minister Paul Wheelhouse is to make a statement at Holyrood, which is expected to confirm an effective ban after years of consultations.
As a result of our decision, fracking can only happen if licences are issued, and we do not intend to issue any licences which would permit fracking. To put this position into immediate effect, the Chief Planner has today written to planning authorities across Scotland, stating our finalised policy and confirming that a new planning direction is being issued in respect of this policy.
Edinburgh University has the most staff members earning salaries of over £100,000 in the UK, a recent poll has revealed. A total of 335 staff at the university are on wages of £100,000 or more, placing Edinburgh first in the rankings. Glasgow University was fourth, with 246 staff earning that wage, with Dundee ninth, with 133 employees. Taxpayers Alliance spokesman Kieran Neal said, "These ratings shine a light on the thousands of university administrators taking home a very plush pay packet." And in sport, Celtic and Rangers are both in action in the Europa League group stages tonight. Celtic take on group leaders CFR Cluj at home, the team that knocked them out of the Champions League qualifying round earlier in the season. Manager Neil Lennon is out for revenge this evening.
"It was a game that got away from us, and you know, it was always an opportunity in football maybe to, you know, right or wrong, if you want to put it that way, but maybe a little bit of extra motivation for the players. But the motivation is that we've started the group well and we're at home, and it's important to try and reinforce the home advantage when you can."
Meanwhile, Rangers face BSC Young Boys away in Switzerland, and after beating Feyenoord at home last week, Steven Gerrard will be confident his team can take something away from their trip.
"We know we've got talent and goal scorers and creative players in the squad. I think we're in a better situation than we was this time last year. So if we can keep defending well, keep keeping clean sheets, the future can be bright."
The local news bulletins from Chris Gourley there. And finally, the famous song goes, "Who let the dogs out?" But today marks the start of Edinburgh Library's Letting Dogs In. We sent reporter Megan Bonner to find out more.
Every single day, Edinburgh's libraries open their doors to thousands of people. Today, though, tails are wagging as it marks the beginning of dog-friendly Thursdays across three community libraries in the capital. Staff at Central, Oxgangs and Stockbridge libraries have set up an initiative to welcome our furry friends into the libraries instead of leaving them at home. Craig Davidson, owner of Dofo's, Edinburgh's oldest pet store, who are supporting the project, hopes the scheme will increase footfall to the city's libraries.
"I think it would make it more accessible or more, you know, friendly to people just to go, because dogs are such a part of everyone. If they've got a dog, they take them everywhere, so just having that ability to go in with them, they might just go more frequently."
The idea, which first started in Perth, caught the attention of community libraries across the city, with hopes that it will reduce loneliness and also encourage people into the libraries. Manager of Central Library, Fiona Miles, said the libraries are excited to take part in the scheme and have had a positive response so far from the public.
"We've had a wee bit of feedback from, you know, just over social media, to be honest. And a lot of people have been thinking it's a good idea. We have had one or two people who've had a couple of wee concerns about it, so, you know, we've been trying to allay any fears that there might be about it as well. Trying to encourage people to use the library, make sure that they know it's a good, friendly place to come. And also because dogs are great conversation starters. So for a lot of people, you know, they maybe don't get out a lot. They may be very lonely in their house, but they do have a dog. Come to the library, you know, it's a way of getting into having conversations, reducing social isolation and things like that."
The project is being trialled every Thursday for the next 3 months, with the intention to enrol it permanently. So the next time you're at a loose end, pop your dog's lead on and head along to your local library. You'd be barking mad to miss it.
Well, that is it from EN4 News at 4 o'clock. You can follow us online at www.en4news.com, on Twitter and Facebook at EN4 News Online. Good afternoon.
This is Radio Energy News.